It's a story of a guru who resides on a mountaintop, and he has a circle of disciples, but they rarely see him because he's alone on a mountaintop. But once a year, they make the climb up the forbidding mountain to ask him a series of questions about how to conduct their lives, and then they go back down the mountain, and they go off to the village, and they live until the magic moment in the next year when they can speak to the guru again. And one day, Mrs. Schwartz shows up in the village, and she's an old lady, and she says she wants to see the guru. And they say, "Listen, lady, it's a tough climb. We will be happy to take your question up to come back and let you know what the guru says." She goes, "No, I want to see the guru." They say, "All right." And sure enough, the next day, early in the morning, just like you get up early to climb Masada, they get up to climb the mountain, and they climb the mountain of Tibet, and they go up and up and up, and finally they get to the top where the guru, as always, sits there with his eyes closed, deep in meditation, until he feels that his disciples have come. And he opens his eyes, and there they all are with Mrs. Schwartz in the middle. And he says, "Mom, and Mrs. Schwartz says, "Sheldon, enough, come home already." Now, why is that a joke? Because the idea that a Jewish boy is sequestering himself at a mountaintop is, even though uncomfortably familiar, somehow out of sync with what we know he should be doing. The strange thing is that in our tradition, unlike many other traditions, mountaintops are associated with a place that you return from. Nobody goes up the mountaintop to stay there except for Moshe when the time has come for him to die. But as long as he's alive, everyone knows not only is he not supposed to stay on the mountain, but the Israelites actually build the golden calf because they think he's there too long. And there is in this a great wisdom, because there is a human tendency, and it's a powerful human tendency, and the more religious you are, in some ways, the stronger the tendency to isolate yourself and sequester yourself and stay away from the corrupting world. Because the world is corrupting. There you are, deep in communion with God, and the phone rings. Or you have to make breakfast for the kids. And you don't get to have the intensity of experience that you know you would have if only you could go up on the mountaintop. And the question is, why? Why can't we go there? Why aren't there Jewish monasteries? Why is it that even though it's true that there were periods where, for example, Hasidim would take periods of silence, days on which they wouldn't speak, still, in the Jewish tradition, there is no vow of silence that cuts you off from other people? We take vows of continuous talking, but no vows of silence, right? Now, why is that? It's because religion happens between us and other people. It's not what goes on in your own soul. Not unless your soul becomes a conduit to bring it to others. Every time we have a speaker here who talks about the Jewish responsibility to the world, who says we have to care about Darfur, we have to care about how animals are treated in shchita, in slaughter, even though animals aren't Jewish, it's Jews who have to care about them. Someone will say, "Why do we have to care about that?" Invariably, you will get a call that says, "We have so many problems in the Jewish world. Why do we have to care about them?" And the answer is because that's the central Jewish mandate. Nivra Adam Yechidi. the Mishnah says. God created one human being to teach you that every human being is related, and therefore, call him Mekayem Nefesh Echad, someone who saves another person. It's as if they save the world. Last week, we made 250 sandwiches after synagogue. We set up bread and peanut butter and jelly for the second time, and we brought those sandwiches down to the soup kitchen and fed people. Nothing more Jewish has gone on in this synagogue all week long than making those sandwiches. Not even the prayers that you said this morning. That's what it means to be Jewish. You can't be up on the mountaintop and see people once a year. You can't live in a sequestered community and only care about people who are like you. The whole point of the idea that human beings are related is that you find the similarity in those who are unlike you. That nothing human is essentially alien because we're all children of God, and so that child in the Sudan is my responsibility and your responsibility, your Jewish responsibility. And so, making sandwiches, we don't ask, are these sandwiches going to be eaten by Jews or non-Jews? Doesn't matter. It's our human responsibility. Do you have special responsibilities to your community? Absolutely. I don't expect anybody here to feel the same sense of urgency about other nations as they do about Israel. Don't expect people here to feel the same sense of kinship with other communities as they do about the Jewish community. But you've got to care. When people are hungry, it's our responsibility to feed them. When they're homeless, to help them find shelter. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said 200 years ago that most people act as if they should care for their own physical needs and other people's souls. So we're always telling people how they should behave so that they can be good. In fact, I'm doing it right now. You may not have noticed, but I am. He said, but you should do the opposite. You should care for your own soul and other people's physical needs. That's the religious attitude. He shomeret nafshecha ma'od, the Torah tells us. Guard your own soul. It doesn't say go around guarding everyone else's souls. But it does say take care of the widow and take care of the orphan and feed the hungry. That it tells us. In fact, at the climactic moment on Yom Kippur when we read the Haftarah from Isaiah, what does Isaiah tell us? I don't care about your fast. Can you imagine that the rabbis chose that Haftarah to read on Yom Kippur? He said, you want to know the fast that I care about? The one that overcomes wickedness and pettiness and cruelty and insularity. The one that takes care of those who are in need. That's what I want. I don't care that you went 24 hours without food. That doesn't impress me. I say this because as we approach Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, there is a natural and an inevitable and an important turning inwards. Cheshbon nefesh means you have to explore your own soul, but too often, people associate that with only how you feel. What does it mean to do cheshbon? It's look inside, see how you feel. What's your relationship to God? But that's not enough. Cheshbon nefesh is about exploring your actions, what you do, how you behave in the world. Whether, given the fact that we have so much, we deploy it for the goodness of others or only for ourselves. That's what cheshbon nefesh is really about. We sit here today caring about our own souls, but if that's all we care about, then we already know the state of our own souls. There is, after all, only half a step between introspection and self-absorption, between paying attention to what's going on inside of you and only paying attention to what's going on inside of you. This week, those of you that received my weekly email of Off the Pulpit know that I closed with a beautiful quote from the author Iris Murdoch. She defines love in the following way. She says, love is the extremely difficult realization that something other than oneself is real. We feel the reality of ourselves, we're in ourselves all the time, but the truth is, other people are real too. Their pain is genuine, their disappointments just like ours, and their dreams as well. Any Judaism that only preaches to the soul and doesn't tell you to feed the body and doesn't tell you to care for others, that's not the Judaism of this morning's parsha, where we're told explicitly the difference between curses and blessings. And almost all of them refer to the way we treat one another. Not just everyday kindnesses, but as a society as well. Do we care for those who have no one to care for them? For those on the margins, for those without power, and those without a voice. Ki geirim hayitem be'eretz Mitzrayim. We know what it is. We were slaves. To be friendless, to be hopeless, to be alone. The Jewish people were put into this world to make sure that fewer individuals all over the world have to experience that. Last week, as I said, in maybe a half an hour, we made 250 sandwiches. Next time, I hope we'll make more. But what will you do this week? What will you do so that when Rosh Hashanah comes, you will know that because God put you on this earth, one fewer human being has to suffer. One person's life was made better. Whether they know your name or not, whether they know that you did it or they never find out, what child will go to bed a little less hungry? What parent a little less afraid? We know what it is to feel those things. And God knows, through the wisdom of our tradition, we know what it is to cure them as well. Shabbat Shalom.